Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. Now, we're going to ask that you hold your calls for the time being, unless we specifically ask for them. Our guest this evening is Servando Gonzalez. Of course, he has lived in Mexico for a time, and he's here in the United States. He's written a number of books on a number of subjects, but this evening I wanted to talk to him about Cuba as it was before Fidel Castro came to power under Batista, and then, of course, get into the background of the Bay of Pigs, one of the greatest betrayals of modern times. The average American really doesn't understand what this was really all about. They don't understand that we sent those men in there to die, but it was great because we convinced the American people, oh, the Fidel Castro was our enemy, and we were really trying to do something about it. And then, because he had captured a number of the Cubans, why, then they were able to get the major corporations here in America to make large donations of equipment and other supplies that could be given to Fidel Castro's Cuba to help stabilize the fledgling communist dictatorship. And isn't it interesting that we never talk about the somewhere close to 15,000 people that Fidel Castro put to death? They had show trials, and people there that had supported Batista. And remember, Batista had been democratically elected in 1954. And because, of course, the revolutionary activity, why, he began suspending freedom, sort of like we're doing here in America in the name of, he was trying to keep the communists from taking over, but there really were communist attacks and efforts to disrupt the government. And so from time to time, they would simply suspend all rights and freedom of the press, try to regain control of the government. That's what Batista did. And, well, let's get to Mr. Gonzalez, because he is certainly a student of Cuba, and I think it's important you understand the background of Cuba and understand the betrayal of the Cuban people by our government that intentionally brought a known communist to power, and then perhaps you can understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Mr. Gonzalez, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
No, thank you to you to allow me to talk to your listeners, but today I'm going to talk about Cuba, but like in a film, we're going to do some back and forward in time, flashbacks, and let's begin with some event that happened 44 years ago.
All right, let's go to 44 years ago.
The Cuban Missile Crisis.
All right.
The Cuban Missile Crisis began on October 16, 1962, when some American U-2 plane discovered strategic nuclear missiles on Cuban soil. And that was when the crisis began. Days later, President Kennedy told the American public that they had discovered the missiles, and then he ordered a blockade around Cuba. Then Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet prime minister, he said that he was going to destroy the world, and then it was a big brouhaha. And then on October 28th, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev announced that he was going to dismantle the missile bases in Cuba.
I think it's so interesting. It was just a few days before the November elections, and the Democrats were going to lose those elections. It was very, very convenient for the Democratic Party to have that crisis and its rally.
Oh, yes. We'll go to it.
Okay.
Now, and then if you, every book, with a few exceptions, and you read that we were close to Armageddon, and we were close to the brink. Now, how close we were to the brink?
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment here with Servando Gonzalez. Well, go ahead. Pick up the story there, Servando.
Yes, and then how close we were to the brink. There is a new documentary that just appeared is called The Cold War and Beyond and begins with an interview with Robert McNamara. Let's listen to what McNamara says in this new documentary.
The Cold War was the most dangerous era in the history of the world.
We came that close to nuclear war. And we didn't even know how close we were until 20 or 30 years later.
Okay, we were so close, according to McNamara, and then there is a big explosion, and you see the atomic explosion. But let me tell you something. I think that we were not very close.
I think so. Robert McNamara is one of the most evil people in the world.
Yes.
And he's a long time.
He's a professional liar. Now, the thing is that there were never nuclear warheads in Cuba. In 1962, I was an officer in the Cuban Army at the time, and then, of course, this I discovered later. Any of the listeners will argue, okay, well, I've seen the YouTube photos where you see the missiles. Now, let's make a distinction between the SAMs. There were the surface-to-air missiles. One of those SAMs shot down a U-2 in Cuba, and the strategic nuclear missiles. The missiles supposed to be in Cuba, were the medium-range ballistic missiles, MRBMs, SS-4 Sandal. This is a strategic nuclear missile with a, it has, can be armored either with a 1 or 2.3 megaton nuclear warhead. Those were big, big missiles. Now, but if you double check in the photographs, they are everywhere in the books, published in the book 13 Days by Robert Kennedy. There are plenty of these photographs, and then there is a, you can find in the internet, and go and check, and let me tell you, there are no missiles in any of those YouTube photographs in Cuba. In fact, if you read the text in the photos, you see bases, nuclear bases, nuclear warhead bunkers, but you don't see any missile or nuclear warhead. You have to trust that
but
something...
Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Servando is just saying that, you know, this is really very much of a scam. You're told that there are, you know, all these missiles in Cuba. There are never any missiles. In fact, all we know, there were some ships, Soviet ships, that were sailing towards Cuba, and they had something big that was all covered up with tarpaulins. And we were told those were the missiles that were going into Cuba, and, we were on the verge of nuclear war. And if it's all a game, they play these games with our minds. And of course, when Robert McNamara tells you we were on the verge of nuclear war, Robert McNamara was the man who sent our boys over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Vietnam, never to have a chance to succeed, never to be allowed to try to win that war. The rules of engagement were designed that we would specifically lose the war. And Robert McNamara certainly is deeply involved, in my estimation, in the occult. We have an article in West Magazine where he and Henry Kissinger were going to La Baca Grande, the occult center there in Colorado, run by Marie Strong. Today, Robert McNamara is still on the board of directors of the World Future magazine and the World Future Society, which publishes the Futurist magazine. And the logo of the World Future Society until recently was a circle made up of three sixes, like 666. So anyway, go ahead, Servando. I think it was a scam, and you agree.
Yes, I was telling that if you check the photographs, there are no medium-range ballistic missiles there. But you see some objects covered with tarpaulins, but nothing else. And because there were no CIA secret agents in the ground, we have to trust people who say that those were nuclear missiles. But there is some evidence that is missing, is that nuclear warheads emit radiation. And at the time, we have, Americans, we have developed the technology to detect radiations. In fact, in the Dardanelles, in the Strait of the Dardanelles, there were some sophisticated equipment to check the Soviet nuclear submarines traveling through the Dardanelles. So the technology exists at the time, but there is no mention in any book that I know, except mine, about radiation. Now, the CIA people, apparently they forgot about some very important writer, the Chinese expert on military strategy, Sun Tzu. He lived 300 years before Christ, and he wrote a book, The Art of War. And in this book, that is a sort of Bible of intelligence and espionage, he says that deception is the main weapon in warfare.
Deception is the main weapon in warfare.
In warfare. And that's true. That's why my book on the Cuban Missile Crisis is, the title is The Nuclear Deception, Nikita Khrushchev and the Cuban Missile Crisis. And in the cover, you see a photograph of a SS-4 Sandal missile on the Red Square in Moscow, but with the caption, "This is not a missile." Now, on page 179, there are two photographs. On the left, there is a photograph of a picture by a surrealist painter, René Magritte, that is called The Treachery of Images. And it's a pipe. And with a caption, "This is not a pipe." And then on the right, there is a, I put a picture of one of the supposed, allegedly, missiles in Cuba, and I said, "This is not a missile." So what did Magritte try to say, "But this is not a pipe"? And you say, "But this is a pipe." No, that is not a pipe. That is a picture of a pipe. And as I mentioned before, there are no missiles in those pictures. But even if there were any picture of it, let's suppose that a farmer in Pinar del Rio brings, say, he had his called a Brownie camera, and he took a picture, say, "Oh, look, I have a picture of one of the missiles." But even that is not a proof, because a picture of a missile is not a missile.
Well, I think that so much of what goes on today is in the way of deception, but what really happened as a result of the Cuban Missile Crisis is, number one, of course, the Democrats were able to maintain control of Congress, which they would have lost in 1962, because John Fitzgerald Kennedy, people have forgotten, but he was very unpopular. Secondly, of course, Kennedy made a secret agreement with the Russians that we would never try to invade or destabilize Fidel Castro. And three, we pulled all of our nuclear missiles we had. I believe they were in Turkey. Anyway, they were very, very close to Russia. And, of course, they were could have blanketed all of Russia. We pulled those out. So I believe this whole thing was a deception, and of course they can't tell the American people the truth, that we lost totally in this, and there was never any evidence there were any missiles in Cuba, but they created the perception that there were, and that's what it's about. If we have the perception, and they control the media, and they keep telling us there were missiles there, and oh, we were on the verge of nuclear war, most people believe. Would you agree with that, Savanto?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But there is a question that may come to the mind of our listeners. So if there were no true missiles, if what Nikita Khrushchev placed in Cuba were dummies, why he did so? Well, then we're going to jump back in time. According to his memoirs, Khrushchev said that he was in April 1962, he was in Bulgaria. And then he saw in the coast, in the other side of the Black Sea, he saw the Turkey and say, "Oh, Americans have nuclear missiles there, and then I'm going to put nuclear missiles in Cuba to protect Fidel Castro and the Cubans from an American invasion to the Turk." But that doesn't make any sense, because in that same month, just a few days before, Castro had expelled the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kudryavtsev, from Cuba. And he had recalled his ambassador in Moscow, Fauricio Mon, to Havana, and the countries had no diplomatic relations at the time. They, when two countries, they called their ambassadors, they are very close to breaking relations. So it doesn't make any sense that Khrushchev had sized this particular moment in history where the relations between the two countries were so bad to offer Castro nuclear missiles to defend Cuba from an American invasion. So why Khrushchev put these dummies in Cuba? My answer is very simple. Because he was trying to provoke the Americans to invade Cuba and get rid of Castro.
Well, he should have been smart enough to realize, of course, that we had no intention of trying to overthrow Fidel Castro. We had brought him to power. There's no question at all that it was the Central Intelligence Agency and our State Department and other people in key positions of our government that brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing full well he was a communist. That's the incredible thing. And we actually have an interview with the American ambassador to Cuba, who was there at the time when Fidel Castro took over. In fact, I don't know if you ever remember Ambassador Earl Smith, but he told me he was ordered by our State Department to go to President Batista and tell him he would leave Cuba the following day. And I simply said, well, was there an alternative to Fidel Castro? No. Did you know Fidel Castro was a communist? Yes, the president knew, the Secretary of State knew, everybody in government knew that he was a communist, and we brought him to power. So
yes, the person who was sent to Cuba to tell Batista was William Pauley, that he was there. He had business in Cuba, and he was very close to the CIA. He was a close friend to Allen Dulles.
Right.
And he was sent to, he was a friend of Batista also, and he went, and he told him, you have to go. That is already that you have to go. We don't support you anymore. And that. But I was telling you, Castro expelled the Soviet ambassador from Havana. Why? Because he discovered a plot directed by the Soviet ambassador, and they were the Soviet ambassador was also a KGB officer, and they were trying to overthrow Fidel Castro. And Castro discovered the plot, sent to jail some of the Cubans who were involved, and expelled the Soviet ambassador and some of his KGB people in the embassy, expelled them from Havana. But this Kudryavtsev, he was not acting by himself alone. He was following orders. He was, according to Baron in his book KGB, he calls Kudryavtsev master spy. He was a very bright individual, and he had been expelled from Canada because he was stealing atomic secrets. After he was expelled from Cuba, Khrushchev sent him to France. So he was not in a bad position. He was following the orders. Now, why Khrushchev tried to overthrow Castro? And this goes back to the beginning of the Cuban Revolution. When Castro took power in Cuba, he made several approaches to the Soviets, and the Soviets never answered those approaches. Why? Because they didn't trust Castro. Castro was a man of the church. He was educated by the Jesuits. There was a lot of bad blood between the members of the Cuban Communist, the pro-Soviet Cuban Communist Party in Cuba and Castro, and simply the Soviets didn't trust him. But then came the Bay of Pigs invasion.
All right, just hold off for just a moment here, because I think that the Bay of Pigs is already a very, very important event. And, of course, most people think we've really went in to try to overthrow Fidel Castro, whereas nothing could be further from the truth. Well, Servando, had you defected? Were you out of Cuba by the time of the Bay of Pigs invasion?
No, I left Cuba in 1981.
All right, fine. So you were there at the time of Bay of Pigs. So...
Oh, yes. I was an officer in the Army during the Bay of Pigs and then during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
All right, yes, fine. Yes. Well, tell us what your take is.
I was very young and very inexperienced, and I passed through these things. So let's go back to the Bay of Pigs.
All right.
And then the Bay of Pigs, of course, the Bay of Pigs, there were three main activities against of anti-Castro Cubans. There was a strong guerrilla force anti-Castro in the Escambray Mountains in the central part of Cuba, and there was an underground movement in the cities, in the big cities, mostly Havana, Santiago, and the big cities in Cuba, and also there were these many exiled groups in Florida fighting to trying to overthrow Castro by force. And then the CIA grouped all these different factions in Miami into one and sent them to die in the Bay of Pigs, and then left the guerrillas in the Escambray Mountains in the lurch. And then something that is unusual, they almost a week before the invasion, the day of the invasion, they attack Havana. So that alerted Castro about what was coming on. Then he put in jail all suspicious people in Cuba. So the invasion was a disaster. These most people were killed, went to jail, and then the disaster of the Bay of Pigs, the result was that it consolidated Castro's power in Cuba.
And I really think that's really a very, very effective thing. It's sort of like, why did Bill Clinton and Janet Reno send a SWAT team down to Miami to kidnap Elian Gonzalez to send him back to Cuba to build up Fidel Castro's prestige? I mean, if Fidel Castro was the enemy, why would we have done something that foolish?
It's not foolish. It's part of the plan. No, nothing foolish here. No, absolutely not. And it's part of the plan, and the supposed embargo is part of the plan. So the invasion failed, but from my point of view, was a total success because the purpose of the invasion was to consolidate Castro in Cuba and eliminate the armed opposition, and it reached all the goals. So the invasion was a total success. Now, after that invasion, the bona fides of Castro was consolidated vis-a-vis the Soviets. So until the invasion of the Bay of Pigs, the Soviets, they didn't trust Castro. After that, they were surprised. This guy is for real. And that's when they accepted Castro. But as soon as the Soviets reluctantly accepted Castro, something weird began. And then we jump again back in time. Nikita Khrushchev, he was he was a monster. He was called the hangman of the Ukraine. He was the guy who destroyed the insurrection in Hungary and killed. But he was.
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Servando, of course, was in the Cuban Army at the time of the Bay of Pigs invasion, and he feels that it was a great success. It was designed to actually strengthen Fidel Castro's hold over the Cuban people. I believe that. I believe we sent those people who trusted the United States, the Cuban exiles, who wanted to take the country back from Fidel. They were willing to risk their lives to fight for their country, and we set up this elaborate plan, and we set it up to fail from the very, very beginning. Why? Because the CIA had brought Fidel Castro to power. The CIA has kept Fidel Castro in power all through the years, and if you don't believe that that David Rockefeller's daughter is a very good friend of Fidel Castro. You need to read David Rockefeller's memoirs, which we do carry it through Radio Liberty. The whole thing is a fraud, but then so much of what we know is a fraud. So actually, basically, Sir Vander was saying that contrary to the Bay of Pigs being a failure, it was a success if you wanted to raise Fidel Castro's prestige. So you pick up the story there, Sir Vander.
Yes, just a small parenthesis, because you mentioned the CIA, and we need to be careful with the CIA because Donna, and that's what some brainwashers like Chomsky and some people on the left, that they mentioned the CIA. The CIA, since its very beginning, was created in 1947, was never an agency working for the American people. The CIA was, since its very creation, the armed branch of the Council on Foreign Relations. The CIA has always worked for the Rockefellers and the Wall Street bankers, has never worked for the United States. So what we see as failures of the CIA has been victories for the bankers, the Rockefellers, and the academic industrial complex. This is the CIA has never worked for the American people. Now, I was mentioning that the Soviets after the Bay of Pigs, they believed that Castro was real, but immediately something happened, and that was because, and I went back in time, Nikita Khrushchev, that he was a monster, but he was also a realist. And he realized that a nuclear confrontation will bring not only the destruction of the capitalist world, but also of the Soviet Union, something that he didn't like. And then he surprised the world with his doctrine of Pacific coexistence. Okay? And that was bad news for the Wall Street bankers and for the military-industrial complex. Now, what Castro did as soon as he began infiltrating the Soviets was attacking Khrushchev's doctrine of Pacific coexistence. He began creating guerrillas in Latin America and all around the world, in Asia, in Africa, in the Middle East, and he created a movement called the Tricontinental Conference, where he called for fighting the imperialism with arms to fight, and that was totally contrary to Khrushchev's doctrine.
But of course, he sent his troops over to Angola, the Cuban troops to Angola.
Yes, that was later.
To protect the communist regime that was actually financed by Chevron Oil Company.
Oh, and the Chevron was paying in dollars to the Cuban army in Angola.
And I think that's just an important point Savannah was making, is that Chevron Oil Company was financing the communist militia that was over there, sent by Fidel Castro, that was fighting the anti-communists who wanted to bring freedom to Angola. And Chevron Oil Company wanted to keep the communists in power. The communists couldn't raise a decent army, so Fidel Castro sent his army over there, and that's where they're fighting. People have a hard time putting it all together. You have to understand that there are people who have a different allegiance. Chevron Oil represents the Rockefellers. They have no loyalty to the United States. Their loyalty is this internationalist dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion. In fact, they had a tanker over there in Angola. It was known as the Condoleezza Rice. And, of course, shortly after Condoleezza became the National Security Advisor to President Bush, why, the Condoleezza Rice tanker just disappeared. Well, they just repainted it, gave it a different name, and because we wouldn't let the American people really understand that this communist regime in Angola, financed by the Rockefellers, had a tanker named after the National Security Advisor, who today just happens to be the Secretary of State. We'll be right back here with Servando Gonzalez talking about what's going on and, of course, we'll explore this a little further before we open our lines for calls. Well, Savander, you go ahead and pick up on that story.
Yes, and then we are going to do another jump back in time because a question that may come to some of our listeners' mind is why Castro was doing that? Was he crazy? No, he wasn't. The problem is that Castro was an agent of these people, the same people who created the CIA. And there is a long article that is have been for many years in the Internet that I wrote some time ago, and the title is Fidel Castro, Supermole. This article I wrote about 9 years or more ago has been in the Internet since, and it has been reproduced in many places, and I suggest your listeners to read that. It's like a spy novel, a spy story. It's Fidel Castro, Supermole. At the time, that was about 9, 10 years ago, I had my suspicion that Castro has been recruited by the American intelligence services. But at the time, was only a suspicion. Now, I have, it's not a suspicion, I have almost it's circumstantial evidence, but that Castro was recruited in 1948, in April, at the beginning of 1948, and he was very young, he was 21 years old, but he had already killed the first person. He was a gangster at the University of Havana, and he began, the intelligence people in the American embassy in Havana have noticed him. There are some memos. And they recruited Castro in the house of Mario Lasso, that was the lawyer of some American interests in Cuba, very close to the U.S. Embassy in Havana. And they sent him to Bogota, Colombia, to participate in the killing of leader Gaitan and create an incident later known as the Bogotazo.
Yeah, because he went on the radio there. They see the radio station.
Yes,
went on.
The one who said that listened to him on the radio was Pauly. Right. William Pauly, the same one who later went to see Batista to tell him to go. But I have made my conclusion because Pauly actually was in the house of Mario Lasso when the recruitment of Castro happened. So most likely that was a lie. He didn't hear anything. That was a lie. Castro was an agent provocateur, and they were trying to blame the communists for the Bogotazo. Now, the thing is that Bogotazo happened.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. We've got to bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Servando Gonzalez, and we'll get right back to what you were talking about, Servando, but I want you to have an opportunity to get your website out, and if you'd like to mention your books, you go right ahead.
Yes, my book on the missile crisis is The Nuclear Deception, Nikita Khrushchev and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the one about Castro is The Secret, Fidel Castro Deconstructing the Symbol. Now, I was mentioned that when the Bogotazo happened, there was something very important going on in Bogota, Colombia. It was taking place the 9th conference of Latin American countries, and George Marshall, at the moment, American Secretary of State, was there. And then as soon as the riots erupted next day, Marshall blamed the communists, and then all the delegates signed a very strong declaration against communism. And then that was the beginning of the Cold War in the Western Hemisphere. Because this put the fear on all these people. And now let's go back. Let's go back to what I began this program about, this documentary, The Cold War and Beyond, and you listen to McNamara. Now, who are the people who participate, who are interviewed in this documentary? There are some Russians, but Robert McNamara, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Edward Teller, General Andrew Goodpaster, General Brent Scowcroft, Robert Gates, ex-CIA director, Gerald Ford, ex-president. Now, interesting, All these people I have mentioned, they are members of the Council on Foreign Relations. How interesting. Now, my question is why these so important people, they waste their time going to this documentary and telling a bunch of lies? Well, they are very important people. Why? Because they have invested a lot of time. McNamara has been in Cuba some conference, and there were nuclear warheads in Cuba. There were a lot of missiles. There were a lot of books, most of them written by members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Why these people invest so much time and effort and money trying to change the past? Because as George Orwell in his book 1988 say, who controls the past controls the future, and who controls the future controls the present. And they are trying to give credibility to past fears, even though those fears were not real. They are trying to give credibility to the past fears, so that way give credibility to the present fears, who are also lies.
And of course, I think what people really have to understand is that from the very inception of communism back in 1917, 1918, it was largely financed by American corporations and American banks. And if you
absolutely. Lenin was sent them with a lot of money from the bankers. Trotsky was living in Manhattan at the time.
Right.
And then they gave him a lot of money, put him in a ship, and the Canadians detained the ship. And then President Wilson, of course, Colonel House, and then he called the Canadian government, no, let the guy go. So all the money came here, and you see the books by Anthony Sutton, when all the technology, you know, the Soviet missiles were very inaccurate, and then we gave them the technology to make them more accurate. Like we gave the technology to the Chinese and to the Koreans. And who give the bacteriological warfare agents to Saddam Hussein? We. And then Hussein helped his friend Castro and gave him the technology. So we have created enemies. We cannot live without those enemies. And this is something that the American people need to understand, that they have been lying to us.
In fact, I think it's so interesting now that Fidel is working with Hugo Chavez, and Hugo Chavez is becoming the new enemy who's rallying and organizing South America against the wicked Yankees in the North. So until American can understand that everything is illusion, everything is delusion, everything is manipulated, and if you'd like to verify the financing of communism from its inception, let me suggest the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution by Professor Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
My interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which gives you references to so many other books, many of which we have, going into the background of how we finance communism. Why? Because you have to have an enemy. Just like Fidel Castro. He's our enemy. Oh, we hate Fidel Castro.
And then Castro is dying, and he got his sub-agent, Hugo Chavez, and then they're putting fear, because now they have this plan to create the American Union, like the European Union. Now we have the beginnings, just fusing the three countries, Canada, the United States, and Mexico, in a country called North America, and then it's going to go to Central America, and then the whole continent. The leaders, the people in these countries, they are not happy with that. Then they create a fear that seems worse than the fear of the Americans, the Castro-Chavez fear. And then, so the people will accept what they see as the less of two evils.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Servando is really right on. I think it's so important that people understand that so much of what we believe just isn't so. And really, the great tragedy of the Bay of Pigs, we sent those men in there to die. And, of course, then we ransomed them back, and we used that ransom as an excuse to funnel massive amounts of money into Fidel Castro's government. You have to understand, communism doesn't work very well. It's not efficient. It is totally contrary to human nature, so it constantly has to be subsidized under one guise or another from outside. And we have kept Cuba going all the time, pretending we just dislike it. And anybody who'd like to read David Rockefeller's memoirs to find out that why David and Fidel Castro were meeting in New York, I think it was 1995 or 1996, I'm sure it was a nice private meeting. They were just laughing at how foolish the American people and even the people of Cuba are not to see through this whole charade. Go right ahead, Savannah.
Yes, something that I'm going to share with your listeners because I think that they are... they have the knowledge. They have, if they listen to your programs, they know what we are dealing about. This is something that we share with them. I never believed that Castro was a communist because you know he was educated by the Jesuits. He was a reader of Nazi the fascists. His mentors were Benito Mussolini, Primo de Rivera, the Italian and Spanish fascists, and of course Hitler. And then I never really believed that he was a communist. Now at some time I reached the conclusion that he was a fascist of the Nazi type. But now I kept evolving about him. I have studied him very close, and there was something because some people in Cuba believe that he is the follower of Santeria, this African religion that is very extended in Cuba. But I think, no, that is a smoke screen. Castro is really a sort of New Age guru. And what opened me my eyes about that is that in the in the late 60s and early 70s, the Beatles were they were prohibited. The radio station in Cuba songs by the Beatles were banned, and then people who get caught with Beatles records, the records were confiscated, and some young people even were sent to jail. So there was an anti-Beatles official policy in Cuba. Now, suddenly, I read in the newspaper that in a park that happened to be just 2 blocks from where I used to live in Havana, they inaugurated a sculpture of John Lennon sitting in a bench, in one bench, and to the inauguration, Castro himself went to the inauguration, and he mentioned that he really liked John Lennon because he was such a good guy, and blah, blah, blah. Now, if you read the lyrics of that song called Imagine, Imagine is just the all the ideas of the New World Order are there. A world without God, without without countries, without everything except royalties, because he was making a lot of millions with royalties. But the world of the New Age. Imagine is actually a New Age song, and then suddenly Castro went there, and it was very weird, but I began investigating in that sense, and I found a lot of weird things. Do you know that when Elian Gonzalez was captured was hijacked by the Janet Reno thugs, he was sent to this place of the Aspen Institute in Washington.
Yes, Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies there.
Yes.
And, of course, all of these things, you're absolutely right. There is behind everything these spiritual forces, and, of course, they all tie into the occult, but the average individual doesn't even understand the spiritual component behind what's going on. We've got Ian calling us from Ontario, Canada. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. Glad to have found you on the shortwave again.
Let me tell you, we're moving again on Sunday. We'll have it posted on our website, hopefully. They just told us today they're going to change us on Sunday. So
with a change in the daylight savings time.
Right. And so anyway, but go to our website so you can find us again. Anyway, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, I'm wondering whether your guest can confirm that Mike Clinton, the young revolutionary lawyer Fidel Castro in the late 50s, was reported to be carrying a copy of Mein Kampf around because, like Clinton, Castro admired Hitler as a revolutionary because Hitler, unlike Lenin and Castro himself and others, accomplished his revolution, his National Socialist Revolution, not by military conquest, but through the legitimate instruments of government.
All right, well, that's a, have you ever heard of Cervantes? Or...
Yes, oh, that's absolutely true. There's even more. When Hitler tried to give the military push in 1923, he was sent to jail, and then when he went to the trial, he began defending himself, and then he ended his speech with the words, "Condemn me, never mind, the God of history will absorb me." Now, when in 1953 Castro tried to overthrow Batista, he attacked the Moncada garrisons in Santiago de Cuba. Then he was captured, he was sent to jail, and then during the trial, he passed from defendant to accuser, and he ended his speech with the words, "Condemn me, never mind, history will absolve me." Yeah. And in fact, if you do a search in the internet and with this word, "history will absolve me," that's the title that later they gave to that speech, and those are his words.
Okay, anything else, Ian?
So he took the word literally from Hitler.
Anything else, Ian?
Your guest has confirmed everything I've been trying to tell people up here, that Castro is serving the agenda of the American elite, and
absolutely.
He's the best friend the Rockefellers ever had.
And absolutely. When Castro has been twice invited to the Council on Foreign Relations, that has been not reported in the press, Castro has been always an agent provocateur. When this incident in the hotel in Manhattan, that he said that they were killing chickens, and then he went to the Teresa Hotel, that was a provocation. He was sent there to penetrate all these black movement, like the Black Panthers. That was his job. And see that the Black Panther was destroyed by the FBI later. So he has been an agent provocateur for these people. And now he was an agent provocateur for the September 11, 3 months before the September 11 attack. He went for a tour for about seven Muslim countries and incited anti-American sentiments and saying, "Oh, the America is on its knees. Now is weak. This is the moment." Blah blah blah. And then, of course, those Muslims were Patsies. And that's what he does. He look at, and Hugo Chavez is a patsy. Okay?
Ian, I would suggest you get a copy of my talk on the World Revolution. We cover a lot of that, and I think if you could get people to watch that, and then, of course, there my interview with Ambassador Smith, where he, of course, tells us amazing.
Oh, that book is very good. The Fourth Floor.
Right. Well, of course, I have an interview with him on this video.
Yeah, The Fourth Floor.
Right.
Fourth
and
floor.
This is the gentleman.
And you know that The Fourth Floor, because the first part of the American government that the conspirators penetrated and totally controlled was the State Department.
Right.
Then they created the OSS, and then the OSS, the CIA.
Okay. Does your guest have a book, sir?
Yes, he does. And do you want to mention how they can get the book again?
Which one, my book?
Yes, your book.
The one on Castro, you can buy in Amazon. In Amazon, The Secret Fidel Castro, Deconstructing the Film. There is a big chapter, probably the best in any book about Castro, about his fascist idea.
And of course, as Fidel Castro, is it Reconstructing Fidel Castro?
No, it's The Secret Fidel Castro.
Oh, The Secret Fidel Castro.
Deconstructing the Symbol, because he has been always a symbol of the left, and he is not a person of the left. By the way, something that I would like to tell the listeners, very important, because one of the things that the left always brings about is the killing of Salvador Allende, the Chilean president, by the CIA. Well, there are news about that. Like many cases, the killing of Allende was a joint operation Castro-CIA. Now, there is news, there is an ex-Cuban intelligence agent who's living in exile in France, and he has said that Allende didn't commit suicide. That Patricio de la Guardia, General Patricio de la Guardia, who was his chief of security detail.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in a moment. All right, Savando, go ahead, make your point.
So my point is that the killing of Allende was the CIA, because the one who destabilized the Allende regime, the Allende government, was Castro. Allende was a president elected by the popular vote, and he was not going to make a revolution Castro style. And then when Castro realized that, he said, okay, you go out. And then he began sending weapons and his people there and create revolution and destabilizing the country. So giving the opportunity for the CIA to intervene. But the one who killed Allende actually was one of Castro's men. I have also reached the conclusion that the death of Che Guevara was also a joint CIA Castro operation. At some time, it seems that Che Guevara began suspecting that something was wrong with Castro. Then Castro sent him to Bolivia and gave him no support, and probably helped the CIA to get rid of him.
Okay, hold on.
He knew too much.
Ian, we're going to have to let you go because we've got one more caller. Let's go to Tom, calling from Ohio. Quick question, Tom, before we're just about out of time.
Please don't forget Anastasio Somoza. They murdered him, too, the CIA and then people.
I didn't hear you the beginning of the question.
Well, he was just commenting that Somoza, General Somoza of Nicaragua, had gone to Paraguay, and he was, of course, murdered in Paraguay, and it's quite obviously a CIA operation.
Remember his name, Anastasio Somoza. He was a great man of liberty.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Tom. The tragedy is most people find it so difficult to believe that there is a dark side to our government. I love America, but we've got to expose that these wicked and evil people who are part of this, call it what you will, I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness, because, of course, they serve a different God. Anything else, Tom, before I let you go?
No, just to tell, as I said in my previous program, that I'm with my friend Dan Dillman of Extol Media Group here in San Leandro, California. We're going to begin a series of video programs dealing with all these subjects. And at the first one that we're going to make the recordings very soon is Partners in Treason.
All right, we're out of time, Savando. Yes. You keep in touch with me. We'd love to have you back on. And thank you for calling, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And appreciate both of you being with us this evening. But we're out of time, and I can't do anything about that. So we're going to be back in just a minute to wrap this program. And the next hour, we're having Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Savando. We've talked to Savando before, and he has a great deal of very valid information. If you'd like to see how it all fits together, let me suggest you get my video, World Revolution, which really deals primarily with Cuba, although it puts what happened in Cuba into the context of this evolving world revolution that began in 1776, and then the second revolution was in 1789, and then a series of revolutions in Europe, culminating with the Russian Revolution in 1917, and, of course, the Cuban Revolution in 1958, and bringing Fidel Castro to power in 1959. but the revolution continues. We've just recently brought the communists to power in Nepal. We're placing, when I say communist, it's really a misnomer. This is a fascist movement, a red fascist movement, which is being financed by the United States throughout the world in an effort to bring about a one world government. And we simply put leaders in that will go along with the agenda, and if they don't go along with the agenda, why then we send in the jackals. Those of you who have not read the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, or listened to our 4-tape set, you really need to get it and read it. I believe it's very accurate. Why? Because they have an attack on it up on the State Department webpage on misinformation. But then everything they attack, I believe, is true. That the State Department, misinformation, type it into Google, and you'll find the attack on, of course, John Perkins' book. Get it, read it, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and the 4-tape set, Economic Hitman. Nothing quite like it out there. You need to understand what is going on throughout the world and why there's increasing hatred of our country. It's not because the American people aren't basically good, although we've certainly turned our back on God. There is still this tremendous residual of good people in this country. It is simply because there is an organized conspiracy of evil. There is a conspiracy against God. And when you understand that, things really do begin to make sense. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. I hope you'll want to get the video. It's called World Revolution. The book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and Economic Hitman, the 4-tape set. And then we have so many other 4-tape sets that, and videos. Let me suggest a Brotherhood of Darkness video, the book, or the DVD. You can get them all from Radio Liberty. You need to get, of course, our material on what's going on in the Middle East. The background to all the wars of this last century. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story, and you want to get the syllabus with it because it has all of the documentation you'll never find elsewhere. Iraq, the Untold Story. If you want to know how they're poisoning our children and destroying their minds, Hidden Agenda, the syllabus, the VHS, it's available on video, not on, at least at the present time, not available on DVD. And then, of course, go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and pull down the information that's available there. So then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get our newsletters. You can pick them up there on the Internet, or you can subscribe, which will help us, or you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters because, of course, we need your support to be able to continue doing what we're doing. And again, of course, that address is RadioLiberty.com, www.RadioLiberty.com. And if you want to talk to us, the number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We are involved in a spiritual battle that is being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. It's a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and most people have no idea what's going on. Our churches have been fairly well neutralized because our seminaries were infiltrated long ago, and it's about time that the good people of this country, and we are the vast majority, begin taking America back. We may have to form our own churches, or if you're fortunate to find a minister who will at least preach the gospel, that's the important thing. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually. For survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And this evening is one of my favorite guests, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And Bob's been at this even longer than I have, which is an awfully long time. Bob Chapman, how are you doing tonight?
Well, just terrific. Just terrific. Happy to be back again.
Well, of course, that stock market is just going through the roof. My goodness, it's up over 12,000, and of course, the price of oil is down. And isn't it wonderful what they can do, manipulating us to create a reality? Everything's great, so we'll vote for the Republicans and maintain the Republicans in positions of power.
Well, that's the idea.
I know it is,
but I think it's also to keep all the incumbents in, because the administration has been able to do what they want with the help of others, you know, from the Democrat Party as well. There's a pretty widespread group of people who have either been paid off or they've been compromised in the sense that Mr. Foley was, and others are in the same boat or something similar.
Well, Chris, my concern about the upcoming election is with the electronic voting machines. If you don't have a paper trail, they can elect anybody they want to. They could elect a raccoon. I mean, these electronic voting machines are rigged, and we've seen example after example after example where the Chrissy exit polls have no relationship at all to the way they vote. And time and time again, there'll be, you know, an area with 300 or 400 or 500 people registered in a precinct, and you'll come up with thousands of votes for George Bush. That doesn't happen by accident. If it happens once, you can never trust them, and it's happened over and over and over again in Sydney, Ohio, during the last election.
Well, you're right, and it's happened in a lot of other places, too, and I don't know how we're going to fare in that regard. It's a very, very deep-seated problem that the politicians in power have generally avoided, and I think that if the status were to remain the same, the American citizens would be in serious trouble. If one or both of the houses were taken by Democrats to cause a schism in leadership, then that would be good, and we might be able to accomplish something. It's a very iffy thing. We'll see when we get there. And all we can do is go out and not vote for incumbents unless they're really, really good guys like Ron Paul.
Well, I think, of course, we've got a little over a week and a half before the election's coming down the line. And this could certainly be one of the most important elections of my lifetime, and I think yours as well. And basically, we cannot tolerate to have an administration that has legalized torture, and of course, it has got us into this terrible quagmire here in the Middle East, and of course, really wants to go to war with Iran. I hope and pray, of course, that they're not going to be able to do that, that this could just have terrible consequences for the life of everybody listening to the program. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman as we explore his thoughts on what's happening economically and, of course, geopolitically. So just hang on there. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, Bob, you picked the story up, and what's your thoughts?
Well, as far as the Middle East is concerned, I believe that, and I've talked about this in the International Forecaster, we started to see disunity and disappointment among the Illuminists about 4 months ago now, when Zbigniew Brzezinski made his comments regarding the administration and how they made such a terrible mess out of the Illuminist plans in the Middle East. And he said that the possibilities for world government had been set back 5 to 10 years. Well, I think it's more like 20 or 30, because these people have really, really made a terrible mess of it. And I think that that, and unbeknownst to the public, until just recently, Henry Kissinger has been working with the administration to try to help them sort out the situation in the Middle East, and obviously he was unsuccessful in that endeavor. But then James Baker III, who is a family friend of the Bush people and on a higher level in the Illuminati, came on the scene with a commission that was dreamt up out of nowhere. And, of course, they're all insiders as well. And he is talking about withdrawal from Iraq within 6 months to a year, and Afghanistan. And they've been back-channeling with the Iranian government, the Syrians, and the Iraqi factions for 2 years. And I think that what they're going to do is get out, regroup, so to speak. I don't think they're going to pursue Iran as much as George Bush would like to, or even more so Mr. Cheney and Rumsfeld would. And I see a dichotomous situation arising with the, we'll call it the appointed Iraqi government. And I think what they're doing is setting up a blame scenario. And they'll blame the inefficiency and the thievery of the Iraqis who were in power and were there before them in power. And I believe that they will purge.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is saying he thinks that they're setting up a sort of a blame scenario in Iraq. They're going to blame Malik, the current premier there in Iraq, and a lot of the people that were around him, the people who have been just stealing money right and left. In fact, that was the theme of 60 Minutes last Sunday. Oh, my goodness, almost $1.5 billion has disappeared that was appropriated for the military, and it's all being stolen. Of course, it was stolen by people who were very close to Paul Bremer, but be that as it may, Bob thinks they're setting up a blame game so that we'd be able to pull out of there and just say, oh, these, it's all the Iraqis' fault that things are such a mess. Is that pretty what you're saying, Bob?
Well, it's not all the Iraqis. Within the administration, there has to be a purge. And I believe, of course, that the first two to go will be Rumsfeld and Cheney and their entourages. And over a fairly short period of time, there will be a heap of blame laid on the neocons. And there's going to be quite a fight going on within the ranks, so to speak.
But how are you going to get rid of Dick Cheney? He's an elected official. He's the vice president of the United States. And not only that, but he's a member of the Trilateral Commission. And his wife now is taking his place. She's on the Trilateral Commission. So he's going to be pretty hard to get rid of, isn't he?
No, I don't think so. And the reason why is that he is probably down at level 8 on the pecking order. I mean, there's an awful lot of more important people above him, and what they say goes. And that's why Baker's on the scene. And he's going to be told that you're going to leave or you're not going to be alive very long. And they understand that. They'll do what they're told. And I believe that's the way it's going to work out. I think there's a good chance that the House can be won by the Democrats. There's a a very minor possibility, or I shouldn't say very, I just say it's 60-40 against taking the Senate because Lieberman's running. And the reason Lieberman's running as an independent is that I believe that he will win. And I think that when Rumsfeld goes, Lieberman's going to take his job, and the governor of Connecticut will appoint a senator, and that senator will be Republican. And that could give them a tie or a one-vote margin in the Senate. There's all sorts of machinations going on, and for those who read the forecaster, they get that twice a week if they're getting the email copy. And, you know, we really stay on top of this, and there hasn't been much I've been wrong about.
I think it's so fascinating that in Connecticut, the Republicans are actually backing Lieberman over the own Republican candidate. What sort of madness is that? I mean, so there's a Republican running. They're not, the Republican Party in Connecticut isn't backing him. They're backing Lieberman, as, of course, there are all the Democrats who would have backed him anyway. And that's probably the way he'll get in.
Go ahead. As you and I know, and we can pass this on to the listening audience, and that is today's Republican Party, which was hijacked, is not conservative. It's not right-wing. It's got nothing to do with those values. What it is a neo-fascist government. Government by regulation. And fascism, corporatist fascism, is just another form of socialism. Only it's state socialism as opposed to international socialism. And that's what we've got. We've got two groups of socialists of one form or another that we get to vote for. There are exceptions, but there's not many of them. And most of the people who are there are bought and paid for or compromised. And that's why it's so important to remove incumbents. And I don't care who they are, Republican or Democrat, just get rid of them. And if Mickey Mouse is running on the Democrat ticket and the Republican is the incumbent, we want him out and vice versa.
Well, I won't disagree with you. What I'd like to see would be gridlock in the Senate and gridlock in Congress so that nothing could get done, because anything they do back there is simply designed to take away our freedom. What we need to do, as I think it was Sidney, it was either Will Rogers or Mark Twain, I can't remember which, but his comment was, no man's life or property or pocketbook are safe when the legislature's in session. So what we need is a lot of gridlock back there with nothing getting accomplished.
Well, Mark Twain was certainly hypercritical of politicians, so it probably was him.
Okay, go right ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was just making a comment on your comment. It was probably Mark Twain.
Right. I think he said, I don't make jokes. I just watch and see what Congress does. Anyway,
well,
go right ahead.
If we get new people, I think there'll be dramatic changes. And that's the only way we can save ourselves. If we can't do that, it's over.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the markets, because certainly the markets have reached not a completely new high, because, of course, you'd have to correct it for inflation, taking back to 2000, which would mean it really have to be up about 13,500. But, you know, at least it certainly has gone up considerably in preparation for the election. So what's your take about that? What do you think will happen to the market? What do you think will happen to the oil? What do you think will happen to the dollar following the election?
Well, first of all, I think the listeners have to accept the fact that the markets, all of them, are being regulated. I've got sitting in front of me here the executive order by Ronald Reagan, which formed the Working Group in Financial Markets. And they just do as they please. It was for emergencies, but that's not what it's being used for. And it's being used to manipulate everything. And the stock market is being manipulated to a higher level in order for those people who are in office to be reelected. It doesn't matter what party they're in. As long as they have control of them, what do they care? And generally speaking, one party is very similar to the other. And so that's why we have a 12,100 Dow Jones Industrial Average. And I don't think it's going much higher. I think they've proved their point. I saw the new Secretary of the Treasury via Goldman Sachs on television today on CNBC. And this is the CEO of Goldman Sachs, which is one of the most profitable firms in the world because they get inside information all the time. And I might say that I was in the brokerage business for 28 years and owned my own firm, so I know from whence I speak. And I couldn't believe how poorly he spoke, how ill-prepared he was. And if I didn't know better, I'd say he was dumb. I mean, this guy was like some lineman in football who got his brains scrambled. But anyway, they're all singing the same tune, and that is everything's going to be wonderful, and we're not going to have a real estate crash. Like Alan Greenspan said yesterday, most of the worst is over, and there'll probably be a little bit more, but that's it. And he also commented on the dollar and said that private and central banks have been moving away from the dollar. And and there was concern about the dollar. And Alan Greenspan's trying to tell us that he just discovered this. Well, I get news for you. He's the one that caused it. Don't forget, he was in office in the privately owned Federal Reserve System since 1987. And he just recently left this past February. So all of the mess that's been made has been made by him. And I believe the dollar over the next few years will go 35% lower. And there's a thing called the dollar index, which is 85 and change right now. I think it's 85, 35. Supports at 80, it'll be broken. Because the Fed's in a box. The conspiracy's in a box. And the reason why is their whole plan for the Middle East has fallen asunder. And their plans for a worldwide depression cannot be stopped. And so they're wringing their hands, figuring out, what am I going to do? And what they're going to do is continue to inflate by creating money and credit. And if you remember, in March, the Federal Reserve did away with the production of M3, which we publish now, an estimated M3, in the International Forecaster. And I am just absolutely stunned that nobody else has done it, because it's not that difficult.
Now, I think for our listeners, I have to understand that M3 tells us what the Fed is really doing as far as making credit available and bank loans available. And M1 and M2, of course, are give you more of an idea of money in circulation and money in the bank deposits. But M3 is really what they're doing as far as expanding the monetary base. And what's the current rate of expansion?
Well, the official rate, we don't know because they don't publish it.
Yeah, but what is your
anymore? My rate is 11.5 to 12%.
All right, then. So
that's been going on for 5 years.
Right. And, of course, what this is doing is just progressively eroding the value of the dollar, and eventually, of course, it will tend to impoverish the majority of the people in this country. Because, of course, the stability of a society is depend upon the stability of the currency. And ladies and gentlemen, we used to have a stable currency. We no longer have a stable currency. We have a fiat currency that, of course, is the reserve currency of the world, but for how much longer? We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Okay, Bob, pick the story up from there.
So, because the professionals obviously are too lazy to go find out what M3 is doing, or the tick, which they're going to do away with as well, which is another gauge. They don't know what's happening.
But that tick is, I don't think most people have ever heard of that phrase before.
Well, it's another form of money measurement. I just leave it at that rather than try to explain it on the radio because it's a little difficult. But it's just another gauge that they're trying to, they will get rid of. And this is to obscure and hide what they're doing. There's only one way out for them, and it's not going to be successful. And quite frankly, they know that. They've done this before, but not with the overhanging debt which exists today. Totally different. And so they will inflate and inflate and inflate until they can't anymore. Until it's all pushing on the string. In other words, they're making gobs of money available sometime in the future, 6 months, a year and a half from now, and nobody is renting the money. And when that happens, you will start to see a diminution in the issuance of money and credit. And once you see that, you'll know that we're about a year to a year and a half away from deflation setting in. And that will be your signal to get out of assets which perform well during inflationary periods. That's at least a year and a half away, and maybe much longer. We don't know, because we have to see how much money and credit they continue to create and how long they do it. And that's why the forecast is so important, because we follow all these things, and unfortunately, nobody else does.
Well, now, do you anticipate that the price of silver will go up during this time before we before the economy begins to turn and contract?
Well, I'll answer that this way. Harry Schultz thinks gold will go to $1,600 an ounce. Jim Sinclair thinks it will go to $1,650. Martin Weiss thinks it will go to $2,050. And I think it'll go to $1,700. Now, why? Because that's just to reflect the inflation since 1980. Now, markets always overdo themselves. And I could easily see gold going on a double from there to approximately $3,500. That means silver will go over $100 an ounce. To answer your question.
All right, fine. Well, what, do you anticipate, though, that this will happen before they begin to contract the economy, before they begin to contract the money supply?
It has to. It can't happen during a deflationary period. During a deflationary period, silver will go down in value with all other commodities. Gold will go down incrementally. If, like in the last depression, everything goes down between 70 and 90% in value, gold bullion or gold bullion coins might go down 20 or 25%. But you'll still retain almost all of your buying power. You won't do that in any other investment. It will be the only investment. And that's where I think these things are headed, and that's what I've been doing for 47 years.
All right, fine. So we're in for a very, very difficult financial time. And hold up. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And if you're out there and you have a question for Bob, you don't have to be bashful. We will take your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Of course, Bob has said that as long as we continue having inflation, then we can anticipate the cost of base commodities is going to continue going up. Do you anticipate that copper and nickel will continue skyrocketing as they have been, specifically nickel?
Well, I think they're, most all of them are going to be a double from here. China is using lots of metals, as are other countries in Asia and other places. And I do not think the Chinese economy is going to slow down appreciably for another 3 years. And that means that growth might drop from 10.8% to 9.8% next year. The following year, maybe it'll go to 7.5% or 8%. And the following year, maybe down to 6%. That's still pretty hefty growth. And so the demand for base metals is going to be enormous. China imports 80% of their copper. And there is a shortfall in copper production. And that's why the price is $3.42 is where it's at. And I think it will double from there. And I think the same is true with nickel and zinc. And I think lead and aluminum will tend higher. And I think that platinum and palladium will probably lose their luster because it's a new process that has come on stream that's proven. In fact, I have a report on it, and I have put it in tomorrow as International Forecaster. And so for those of you who would like to get a copy of that, all you have to do is call our toll-free number, and I'll arrange it for you. But that's a very, very new development. But it's been worked on for about 30 years. And it will increase the recovery of platinum group metals from scrap. They do that now, but this recovery process is even better than anything that has been there before. And so the base metals are going higher, gold and silver going higher, stock market's going lower. The bond market, it will eventually go down because yields have to go higher. And the reason that they do is that in order to pull in $3.5 billion a day from foreigners to keep the American economy afloat, they have to keep up with the attractiveness of investments in other assets and other currencies. And I see the European Central Bank, which essentially is the euro, and the Bank of England raising rates twice more before March. And that would be a quarter of a point each time, which would be a half a point, which means we've got to raise ours. Well, we got a problem, and that is if we raise them, there'll be a quick crash rather than an elongated crash in the real estate market. And that market affects derivatives, loans, packages of mortgages, which have been placed all over the world. And if it comes, if the real estate market in the United States comes down with a thundering roar, I think you're going to see everything is split wide open.
And I thought really your some of the remarks you made in your latest forecast were really quite interesting. What the average individual doesn't understand is that people borrow money from the bank for their home. But the bank then takes and actually sells that to and they bundle all these home mortgages, and then they will sell them, say, to either Fannie Mae, or they'll sell them to a hedge fund. And then these hedge funds, you know, have these very, very valuable, supposedly paying 6 or 7% interest, and they think they've got this real good thing going. And then they use that, security for investing in this, that, or the other thing. In other words, it's all paper. But if anything begins to happen and the value of those homes begins to fall or people begin to walk away from them, you're going to see an awful lot of hedge funds really going under, aren't you?
Well, I think all you have to do in a crisis situation is have one or two real big ones go down. And they're not going to be able to stop it. And there's no regulation at all. And most of these hedge funds, quote, are offshore. They're not in America. They're in usually places that have tax laws which are different than ours.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman from the International Forecast. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're just talking about the really potential for a domino effect, and as hedge funds begin to fall, why they'll knock over the next hedge funds, or they'll knock over the next derivatives, and this whole financial house of cards could really come cascading down. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, and it's not a suggestion, actually. It's a guarantee. It has to happen. And the people in charge know it's going to happen. And they want hedge funds for a number of reasons. Number one, to make enormous amounts of money if possible. Also, to bring tremendous amounts of business to banks, insurance companies, and particularly Wall Street. Also, to keep the buoyancy in world markets. Also, hedge funds have the capability of actually creating more credit in liquidity beyond the Federal Reserve and other central banks. So they serve a multiplicity of purposes. And you see this talk about investigation. It isn't going to happen. Wall Street is, you have to be in the business, as I was for 28 years, to understand how jaded and how greedy these people are. It is beyond comprehension. And you got to be there. And I believe that their greed is going to destroy the entire system far beyond what they think would be necessary to change the system in order to bring the European and North American economies to their knees so the people would be forced to accept world government. I think it's going to get out of control, and the window is starting to open. And once the window opens, and we'll see how far the window is going to be open after this election, and if there is gridlock in Congress, that would be wonderful because that would open the window real wide. And what does that mean? It means we can go after these people who have been plundering us, lying to us, not performing for us as constituents, and we can expose the terrible things that they've been doing, like our president, like impeachment. And I think there'll be tremendous changes if we can get that opportunity.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and right now we've got George calling from Toronto, Canada. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Is that a little cold up there yet?
Yes, it is. A little bit below normal temperatures, and we've been getting quite a bit of rain lately.
All right,
what
fine.
Are you going to do?
Do you have a question for
us? Yes, I do. Mr. Chapman, last month I went to the bank and I got some U.S. bills to use in Europe, and I noticed some of the tens were colored. And to be honest with you, I didn't use them over there. I was a little bit concerned that they might be considered as phony. I'll take the answer off the air, but can you maybe elaborate on the new currency? Thank you.
Now, is that, George, was that the red?
The reddish-brown on the tens.
Reddish-brown.
I believe it's reddish-brown, pinkish on the tens. And I actually was a little concerned to use it there, so I just brought it home with me. But
Bob, do you want to comment on that?
I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks.
Well, first of all, they wouldn't have been surprised because they've been seeing those bills for the last 2 years. And if you go out through Latin America or Russia or anywhere, you're going to run into them. And if you go into a supermarket, any of those places, or a place where you change currency, there they are. And I have not seen them in the United States. Although I am sure they circulate there.
I've seen them on several occasions here.
They can't keep them out, so to speak, a recycling process. I mean, you and I go to Mexico or Europe and we come back with some of them, that sort of thing. But I don't know why they're doing it, but they are issuing those bills, and they have been. At first I thought perhaps all they wanted them for was to flood the outside world, outside the United States, with these new bills as an exchange for the old bills. Because perhaps in the future, they weren't going to honor those pink or rose-colored or whatever you want to call them bills. Or on the other hand, maybe they weren't going to honor the bills within the United States. We really don't know. But there was a reason for it. Now, their excuse is they did that so it couldn't be counterfeited. Yeah, tell me another. There's nothing that can't be counterfeited. And the Secret Service doesn't want to talk about it, nor the Treasury Department. But counterfeiting is absolutely rampant. And China and North Korea, Lebanon, even today still Russia, are great, great forges of currencies. And the U.S. 100 is one of the favorite ones. And so I don't know the design behind the whole thing, but I'm sure there's a reason. And, yes, they're out there, and you can use them anywhere presently.
Yeah, so, George, go ahead and spend them out as well. They will decline in value if you don't. So anyway, if our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'll never forget when somebody called me and told me that they'd gotten some of these at a bank in Ireland. And, in fact, a fellow in Ireland had called a friend over here, and I was very skeptical. And then, of course, I think I actually talked to Bob, and he said he'd heard about it. And then we went to a conference at all, and when we came home, we had a number of bills. I think they were $10 bills, as I remember. And as I was going through them, here's one of those bills. And I kept it for a while, and I eventually spent it. But it does have this sort of reddish mark on it, and I'd sure like to know they're up to something that's no good, but I'm not certain exactly what it is. Well, Bob, in your latest forecast, oh, before we go on, I do want you to get out the website and how people can get a copy of the International Forecaster and maybe want to subscribe to it.
Well, we give out free copies, and we publish it two different ways. We publish an email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually every week. Occasionally we take a little time off. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. So if you'd like to get one of those copies, and we send them out promptly, you can call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. If you'd like to go to our site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International,
All right, fine. And of course, one of the things I was really interested in your latest International Forecaster was your discussion of what's happening to the jobs here in the United States. Apropos, or in reference to India, and how many of our engineering jobs are being offshored. Many of our architectural jobs are being offshored. And so many of the people who, you know, have degrees here in the United States who thought they had a secure system are suddenly finding that their jobs are being sent overseas. Certainly within the medical profession, many of the, for instance, have these machines that will take the pictures of the back of the eye, and then they have to interpret that and whether they can determine the degree of arteriosclerosis or retinal detachment. But they actually get these pictures, and then they send them up to San Francisco, and then they're sent to India to read them. Many of the x-rays, many of the CAT scans, many of the MRIs are actually being read in India today because they can get it done so much more cheaply over there. And so many of the doctors who really felt that they were secure here in the United States find that large sources of their income are simply disappearing. And I think we're going to see this increasingly with all sorts of other jobs. In fact, I even read, and I don't know if it was true, but the McDonald's was trying to see how they could perhaps offshore some of their orders. You would actually talk into some sort of a computer, and then the message would go to India, then would be sent back to the fellow who's flipping the hamburgers, and they would then, of course, come up with your order at the end of the line. But you just do away with one of the people in the line over. Everything is going to be to offshore jobs, and with that, of course, goes the living standards of the average American. And I don't think the average American has any idea what's happening. You want to pick up on that that thought there, Bob?
Well, I think you're starting to realize we're 6 years into this in a big way. It actually started around 1980. And we've lost 5 million jobs. We're going to lose them all. And that's a fact. And I don't know who they're going to sell to here in the United States. But that is the intention. The transnational conglomerates are trying to get the cheapest labor available. And as long as we have free trade and globalization instead of fair trade, which we had for the last 250 years, fair trade, as long as we have free trade, we're going to be destroyed. And there's no two ways about it. And Congress has passed everything in the way of free trade legislation. In fact, I wrote a piece a couple of issues back about the vote on CAFTA. And there were two deciding votes. And one was by a congressman from North Carolina who betrayed his constituents and voted for it. And they're losing hundreds of thousands of textile jobs. The other one was Mark Foley. And when the vote came up that night, he was called into the Oval Office. And George Bush told him, this is the way you're going to vote. And I'm sure he told him, if you don't, everybody's going to find out you're doing what you're doing. Of course, they found out anyway. But the point was that what was that is what was used, and that's what I mean by compromised. And so that's the kind of Congress that we have, and that's why it's so important we change it so that we can stop free trade and globalization and start instituting tariffs in all these countries that each and every day devalue their currencies, so that their products will be super competitive in the United States.
Yes, but eventually we're going to get to the point where our goods cannot compete at all. In fact, next year, 2007, where the Chinese are going to start flooding their inexpensive cars into here in the United States. At least this is what we've been told. Have you heard anything more about that, Bob?
Yeah, 300,000 by GM for openers. And that's in 07. They're scheduling 1 million for 08. Ford starts in 08 out of India. And what they're going to do is brand name sell, and you're going to have a bunch of people in those countries putting everything together, and instead of getting paid $30 an hour, they'll get $2 an hour, a buck and a half, whatever. And the profits will be enormous, but I don't know who the heck they're going to sell to. Because, you know, the solidification of wealth in America is now among about approximately 17% of the population. They own most everything, and the banks own the rest. I mean, the American middle class and upper-lower class are trapped in their mortgages. And once this real estate market comes down, they're not going to have any equity left to speak of. And the wealth effect will be gone. And they really are immobile. I mean, the average family has enough money to last for 3 weeks. After that, the game's over. I mean, they go on the street. And we are headed that way fast. And you can all see that out there. I don't have to tell you. You know what's going on in the markets, particularly in real estate, because most all of you own homes. And that's where we're headed. And we've got to have protective tariffs like we've had for 250 years. And if we don't institute it, we're done. We're sunk.
Well, of course, the internationalists have no intention of doing that because they do not want to preserve the financial stability of either our nation or our people because they have no loyalty to the United States. Their loyalty is to this internationalist dream by which they will be able to control the commercial and financial interests of the world. And as Barry Goldwater said, they will do that by first taking control of the government of the United States, and they control it right today.
Barry was right.
He sure was. And incidentally, if you'd like to get the reference to that, it's with no apologies, and it's somewhere between about page 279 and the 285. That's the.
Did you go to that rally in Dodger Stadium in 1964?
No, I didn't.
I was there when Ronald Reagan spoke.
Well, of course, Reagan he was the great communicator. Certainly he said everything I believe. Unfortunately, when he got into political power, he did everything the opposite of what he said he would do. But be that as it may, he certainly was a stimulating individual. I remember when he came to Santa Cruz during the Goldwater era and spoke, and they had these little cards that he scored. You know, everybody was up there applauding and clapping because Ronald Reagan was able to articulate what we all believe. But the vast majority of the American people believe. I'm not sure he believed it, but he sure could articulate it well.
Well, he knew what was going on, and I know that because I used to travel with him, and I was in the Speaker's Bureau. And between me and his brother, he really got filled in. And so he knew what was going on, but he couldn't do much about it because the hands of power at that time were with the Illuminists and the Rockefellers in particular. And they ran things. They told him what to do. I mean, you saw after he got elected, every position was filled by people from Council on Foreign Relations.
Either that or the Trilateral Commission.
Right.
And, of course, we had what most people don't really understand is he gave us the biggest tax increases in our history. It was about 86 when they increased the Social Security taxes, they increased the corporate taxes, they actually took away all the deductions that were available for property, and really, of course, it was the beginning of the changing of the whole structure of our financial tax system. And, of course, he blamed it on Tom Foley. Old Tom Foley lied to me. And see, he said he was going to cut, you know, a dollar spending for every dollar increase in taxes. And, of course, Foley lied. Was he really that naive to believe that Tom Foley would tell the truth?
No, he wasn't that naive.
Well, anyway.
He didn't know what we know, but I'll tell you, he wasn't that dumb.
Well, anyway, we live in a very, very strange world, and America is under attack today. America is under attack spiritually, but America is under attack from an economic point of view. And they're transferring our wealth to other nations throughout the world. And it is not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're discussing, of course, the latest issue of the International Forecaster. As always, it's, of course, jam full of all sorts of interesting little tidbits that give you information on economics you're not going to read elsewhere. Well, they're certainly playing games with gold and silver. This is totally manipulated, isn't it?
It is, but when I heard the speech about a week ago, by Alex Weber, who is in the Bundesbank, and he said that we're not selling any gold. The only thing we're doing is some swaps. Now, that's the first time that a central bank has mentioned that they were actually doing swaps. And a swap is when you give me this and I give you that. And then with further investigation, I found out that the British had been doing it previously. And it's my suspicion the French are, too, because I talked to somebody in the French banking system. They told me that's what they were doing.
Well, now, what do you mean by
a swap? In behalf of the United States.
But what do you mean by a swap?
And what that is the United States government wants to suppress the price of gold so people won't think that there's anything wrong going on. There's not a problem. So they've been selling off whatever gold they've got left. And other central banks have too, either outright or by leasing it. And when they lease it to other people, the people sell it, so it's the same thing. And the swap had to be made in order to use U.S. gold to do this, because they do not have good delivery gold left. They're the only country in the world that has coin melt from 1934-5. And they're using that. And when you do that, you're at the bottom of the barrel.
Hold up. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman. So what you're essentially saying, Bob, is that we really don't have the any gold left. But they keep telling us there's lots of gold there in Fort Knox. Is that simply part of a propaganda campaign, part of the lie that they tell us to make us believe everything's hunky-dory?
Well, yes. The answer is yes. And they've been selling gold for years. And as I said, all they got is coin melt left. Because coin melt and sale a swap, you can't sell it because you have to re-refine it, and they don't want to bother to do that. And so they're saying to Germany and France and England, look, you know, we'll trade you 100 of these for 110 of those. And they have to do that because they don't have any good deliverable gold left. Now, how much previous melt they have, I don't know. Nobody does. But I don't think they got a lot of it. And so I think that the central banks are running out of gold, or gold that they want to sell. How much you got left? Less than 5,000 tons. What do they say they've got? 33,000 tons. Absolute lies. Never happened. And so we're drawing to the close of a period when central banks could influence the price of gold by selling gold. The game will be over shortly. And when it is, gold will go berserk and it'll take silver with it.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be exciting times that lie ahead of us. You've got about a minute to wrap up the program for us tonight, Bob.
Well, I think everybody should be getting out of debt if they're not out of debt already. You know, pay off those credit cards and revolving debts and try to get rid of your automobile debts. There's a good chance in this coming year that one of you won't be employed. Because once this economy really starts to go down, it'll go down fast. And we've been in a recession since the beginning of the year. And after this election, you're really going to find out what we're in. So protect yourself and be sure that you're in gold and silver assets.
All right, fine. Well, I guess it's been Bob Chapman for the International Forecaster. I would second what he's telling you. Begin preparing for difficult times. Batten down the hatches. The storm is on the way. The tsunami is not far behind. So God bless you, Bob. Thanks very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you on here again. We think we got you already lined up a couple of times here for the month of November.
Well, thank you, and I love doing your program.
God bless and bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And, of course, our guest has been Bob Chapman. And I just listen to what he says about M3. It's so vitally important. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoy our programs with Bob as he keeps us abreast of what's happening financially. And, of course, I would simply suggest that if you would like to understand all of these terms, M1, M2, M3, of the gold that's available or not available, at least what they say in the Federal Reserve System, let me suggest our syllabus and either our DVD and or a VHS, The Financial Tsunami. That's The Financial Tsunami. We think it's an excellent source of information, but you really need to have the talk going along with the syllabus, and you can get the two of them together. If you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then if you'd like to understand the spiritual forces that are at work behind the scenes, let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And you can get the book, the DVD, the VHS, the audio tape, or get them all together. And then if you have any question that there is a secret government working behind the scenes, you need to get our four tapes set on the secret government. You need to get our four tapes set on secret societies, or altogether something we call the secret government special, which is two DVDs and or VHSs, plus, of course, the two four-tape sets. If you would like to know what's going on over in the Middle East, our talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, is the history of all of the wars of the last century, and it's specifically the war we're into now, how it was planned long ahead of time, not what I say, but what they say. We give you the documents from the Project for the New American Century, this little group of wicked men who control the leadership of our government today. And, of course, we give you their material, not what we say about it. That's Iraq, the Untold Story, the syllabus, and, of course, the VHS. Then, of course, we do. Many of you will go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and note the things we have. We do carry the Berkey products, and you really need to have something so that you will have adequate water to drink in case there is an emergency. We don't know what the emergency is going to be, but I am firmly convinced that if God is just, he is going to bring his vengeance upon this country before long. If you're interested in knowing more about food or food products, long-term food storage products, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in health products, we have a health product catalog. And then we have our regular catalog of the items that we have that will help you to better understand what's going on. If you have not yet seen my talk on planned population reduction, you really need to get the video. That's planned population reduction. We even have a population control special and, of course, a copy of my monograph on the population control agenda. There is a plan, as incredible as it may seem, to kill off over 90% of the world's population. And you say, who would want to do something like that? Why, evil people, ladies and gentlemen. There really are evil people in the world. And they, of course, have created wars, and they've created famines, and they've created revolutions. And if you really want to go into the background of some of the horrible things that have happened, I wonder how many of our listeners have ever heard of the Great Hunger in China, where between 1958 and 1962, they starved to death between 41 and 43 and a half million people. Now, you can go up on the Internet. There's a book there called, I believe, The Hungry Ghosts. They estimate the number of people starved to death, about 30 million. This was in communist China. How could you suppress that information? Why, very simply, you control the news. Because, as David Rockefeller said when he came back from China a few years later, in 1973, after a tour of China, the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful in history. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao was one of the most important and successful in history. It's just a social experiment, like they're experimenting with us with the new drugs and of course, the mercury in the vaccines and the fluoride in the drinking water. It's all just an experiment. They love to experiment on human beings. After all, there are too many in the world. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Good afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation, it is Friday. Deep breath. Friday, the 27th of October, 2006. Folks that are watching the CNN series, Broken Government, just may be recognizing the simple fact that there is a line in the sand and it has been broken. The thing is I'm trying to figure out if this whole thing is being planned to give the illusion that the mainstream media is waking up. It's